help me welcome our speaker tonight, Sarah from Journey to Freedom in Livingston, New Jersey.
Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Sarah.
Thank you so much for inviting me to be here, Lauren. Thank you so much for being such a welcoming group. Oh my God, I feel like I'm at home. That's usually how I feel in Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank you, Jimmy, for taking this ride with me. Today is my boyfriend James's 9-year anniversary. So he spent the day in the car with me. My sobriety date is January 16th, 2015. So if I, you know, if God sees fit, in a couple days I'll have 5 years of sobriety. And I can't even believe that beyond my understanding, because it was not my plan. If it was my plan, I would not be here. I have a home group that's Journey to Freedom in Livingston, New Jersey. We meet Wednesday nights at 7:30, and if you're ever there, please come. We'd love to have you. We're a big book study. And I have a sponsor. Her name is Karen, and I sponsor other women. And I'm told that keeps me in the middle of this pack, you know, because when I get up there, I really get up there. So I'm here to share with you my story, right? And I can't believe I have a story to tell, honestly. Like, the holidays are usually a time where I can reflect on what I used to be like, because it's like these memories come back, and these, you know, and I'm always in a different place every year, and each year it's like I can really be a brat, but I'm really so grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't think I'd have any type of peace of mind if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. We were talking before the meeting about sponsorship, and you know, my sponsor showed me how to live. You know, I didn't know how to do any of that when I came to you. So I'll tell you about myself. You know, I grew up in Bergen County in New Jersey, small suburban town. You know, I grew up in a Pakistani Muslim household where we did not drink. But there is a lot of isms in my family, and as I've been sober over the years and gotten to know my family, because that's something we get to do, I found that there is alcoholism in our family. And I didn't know that. There were so many secrets, and I just didn't know. But what I did know is what I saw, and what I saw was holes being punched, dishes being thrown, you know, that kind of stuff. I didn't know if the cops were going to be there. And, you know, there have been many times that I've chased my mom back into the house. All the neighbors knew, right? We always were like, you know, the neighbors can't know, but they always knew. You know, the book talks about, like, I can't quote perfectly, but it says something along the lines of, like, the alcoholic's life is the only normal one that they have, right? And all that stuff was kind of, like, I thought every family was like that. I thought everything was like that all the time. But I didn't know that I could have anything different in my life, that I could have a sense of freedom that I have now, right? I didn't know that that was even possible. So my life was in this world of whatever, you know, when you're a kid, you do what your parents tell you, right? But my parents wanted me to go to an Islamic Sunday school, and I went to public school, and I was, like, the only tan, curly-haired, nerdy glasses kid there, and of course I'm different, right, because I'm always different than you, and, you know, I grew up with a lot of bullying, right, because I'm the only one in the world that's ever been bullied, right, and then just use all that stuff to make me so unique, right, like, even as a kid, you know, and I had no idea that that's alcoholism, or selfish and self-centered and self-pity and self-self-self. I don't know any of that stuff. Like, when you're in kindergarten, you don't have that kind of language. You're just kind of like, who wants to be my friend, right, like, who's going to be the person that I can hold on to that'll make me feel okay? And all that's coming from the outside and not the inside. You don't know that, right? So in kindergarten, I'm looking for who's going to be my friend, and that's kind of how I was. I always had, like, that one friend that would do whatever I told them to do, right? And when they didn't, they weren't my friend anymore, you know, on to the next one. And And at very young, I would get into so much trouble at school, and my parents were always so worried that a girl should not behave like this, right? And I was so defiant to that, you know, I was like, I don't want to be that girl that you want me to be, but I didn't know how to be, you know, to thine own self be true. Like, I don't have a manual of life. And the only tools I know are my character defects, which is complete defiance to absolutely everything and anyone who tries to help me. And so, you know, my parents send me to this Sunday school, and, you know, I'm always getting kicked out for being class clown. And when that didn't work, you know, I tried to skip classes and regular school too, you know, I would just disappear, right? And that became one of my favorite things to do, is just disappear. I don't like something, I just disappear. You know, later on, when I came into the program, I got to see how much that harmed so many of my relationships, right? Just walking away from them. So before I picked up the drink, that's how I was. You know, I was always getting in trouble. And I just was already, like, causing so much pain and worry to the people around me. But you just don't see that stuff, you know? And so I remember I was, like, in middle school, and there was a friend of mine who was, like, kind of a friend of mine, and she was kind of popular, and, you know, if she was my friend, then I would be cool, you know? Because I was, like, a really, before I picked up a drink, I was the kid that sat in the back of the room, and everyone knew she slit her wrists and she was crazy, you know? And nobody wanted to talk to me, you know? So I had to figure out how to be, like, that, like, it with you, right? Because I was always, like, on the outside until I found a drink, right? So it was around Christmas time, and we're, like, 12, I'm not really sure, but she snuck in these, like, they're like chocolate vodka shots. You bite them off and you take the shot. I've never seen anything like that in my life. I've never even really seen alcohol. I didn't grow up around it. So you know, we sneak in the bathroom after school and we take these shots and I'm just having a blast, man. And she looks at me and she's like, what are we going to do next? And I'm like, we are going to do that again, you know? And that's all I wanted ever since then. And she was the girl that would get it from her mom's house, you know? That's what we started doing. And then we found a lot of other ways and we got creative and she was my friend through that, you know? So that became something that I was immediately, I got this relief, right? But I'm supposed to be this perfect Sunday school kid and behave at home. And, you know, my family's very modest and I'm supposed to dress a certain way and be a certain way. And so I'm coming home and I'm pretending to be all that, but I'm going out and taking off my clothes and picking up the bottle and I have a totally different life, right? Double life, right? That our book talks about. And I became that. And what that did to me was just this immense amount of guilt of, you know, I'm lying to the people I love the most. And that's the way I'm living my life because I need to drink, right? It's the only thing that was giving me that relief. I never felt relief like anything before I found alcohol. So, you know, I go from, it seemed that everybody had forgotten I was like the slit your wrist girl in the back of the class, and now I'm hanging out with everyone drinking in the woods, and, you know, I built this reputation, right, and I'm cool now, and I have arrived, right? And as my drinking progressed, I started to do things that probably wouldn't have done, but whatever, I did it anyway, so I got the bottle now, so I did it, right? And then that happened over and over again. And I would do things like, you know, I am a really good writer, I should say. And I used to write college essays at like a high school level, and I used to sell them. Sometimes I would trade them for, you know, dry goods. But then I would like the money, right? So I could do what I wanted with it. And then I started to form the stash in the closet and under the floorboards, right? And you can see sitting here that this is my drinking progressing, right, very quickly. But at the time, I didn't have that that consciousness, that thought in my head, it was always just what's next, how am I going to satisfy what I need to do to get that relief, right? Because alcohol, when alcohol has me, it has me, right? It's my master. It doesn't say like, oh, Sarah, like maybe you should go see how your mom's doing because she's crying downstairs on the couch because you haven't been home and you've been sneaking out. And oh, Sarah, like maybe you should go see how your brother's doing because you haven't talked to him ever, really. You don't care about him, right? It doesn't say like you should stop for a second. It just says, you know, I need to take care of me. And that's what I did. I took care of me first, me first. And where that got me was places I never would have been, doing things I never would have done, right, if I wasn't chasing that drink. Incomprehensible demoralization the book talks about, right? And I could stand here and tell you absolutely all those horrible things, but I can sum it up in just, I was a prey to misery and depression, and my sponsor describes that as being attracting that, right? That I have no sense of, like, I didn't, you know, a lot of the stuff that I saw when I got to you, there was no possible way of me knowing that when I was drinking. Because I had no concept of a higher power in my life. The way that I saw that was that, you know, if there's a God, he hates me because I go to Sunday school hungover and I shouldn't be doing that, but I do that, right? And he hates me. So I didn't want to go there. And I did not know about Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know, there was no concept of therapy. Like, there was nothing like that in my world. And I just thought that I was either going to die like this by 18 or just do what I'm doing because that's the only thing I know how to do. Right? And there were nights that I'd, or not even nights, I'd come home by like 5 p.m. because my parents had a very strict system at a very early age because I was doing things that most kids shouldn't be doing, right? So they wanted me home 5 o'clock when they got home from work. So what I would do is I would cut school and I would go do what I needed to do and make sure I'd be home by 5 o'clock so I wouldn't have to deal with them. Because, like, I knew I was hurting them, but if I was home by 5 o'clock, maybe that would fix everything. You know, the alcoholic, like, justifications. It's gonna, you know, if they see me, it'll be okay. And what I would do is show up at 5 o'clock and show them my face and stumble or trip over, like, obviously, you know, impaired, and then just run up the stairs, go to my room, lock the door, and go sit in my closet. I had a closet that's, like, you know, could fit one person. Actually, I fit three people in there once. But go in my closet. I like to be there alone, you know, especially towards the end. I like to be there alone with my bottles, you know. And that's what I would do after, because I wasn't allowed to go out. And then when they'd go to sleep, I'd sneak out, right? And this dishonest life that I just lived, that there's this tiny little part of me that's like, why are you doing this, right? But it's too buried under the resentment and the hurt and the you know. I just don't know how to deal with any of that because I don't have those tools, right? And I'm not saying that my parents aren't good parents. They're wonderful people, and they are so loving in the world that they knew. But I didn't even know them or know where they came from, and I judged all of that, right? And I made it all about like the violence and the abuse and all that stuff, and I couldn't see them as human beings, right? And I'm the type of person that judgment will destroy me. But so that's what I would do. I would come home and I would drink in that closet until they'd fall asleep. And you know, as a result, I really, you know, I mentioned my brother. I never even bothered to speak. His room was next to mine, you know. I'd never talk to him unless I needed $5 or if our parents were going out and I needed him to cover for me. And that is like, you know, I didn't even know that the position I put him in was just worry. Right, constant worry of what's she doing, where's she going, is she going to be back before they come home? Like, why do I have to cover for you all the time, Sarah, you know? And he's just the sweetest kid, man. Like, he does not have this ism. He's just the most straight. You know, even today when I have a conversation, we have a wonderful relationship today. When I talk to him about something going on, and I'll be like, well, maybe I could do this, and then, but if I do that, then this, and then he'll be like, why don't you just ask, you know, like a very direct response to a question. I don't think like that on my own, you know, which is why I need Alcoholics Anonymous and God to work in my life. So my drinking continues to progress, and it goes to a place where it's just lonely and miserable. And I'm like 17, 18 years old, and I'm like miserable, you know? And I found when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous that this disease does not discriminate, right? Like I told you how unique I think I am, right? And then I got this young thing all over me, right? And I don't believe that, you know, maybe I need to stop drinking for a little bit and detox and then I'll be okay and I can, you know, I'm still young and I'm gonna go to college soon. I wanna be able to party and that kind of stuff. But when I came to you and I went back out and I saw the power of alcoholism, you know, I got in my car and I went to one of my friends' house. Well, I borrowed my mom's car, I should say. And I went to one of my best friend's house, and it's not her fault that she doesn't understand that I'm not supposed to be drinking, I'm going to AA, but she pulls out a bottle and she's like, you know, I want you to taste this, Sarah. And what I do is I put a little drop on my tongue, and once it's there, I just chug the whole bottle, right? Can we relate to that, right? And even at that time, I did not know that that's something called the phenomenon of craving and this allergy that we have to alcohol, you know, that when I put it in my body, I need more and I don't know when I'm going to stop, right? And that experience showed me that, because I was hanging out with you guys for a little bit and got enough to know that something was that, you know, and I got drunk and I got back in my mom's car and I got home and nothing happened, but I didn't really remember how I got home, you know? And I started to understand what you meant by a phenomenon of craving and analogy to alcohol, you know, that I can't just have one. And I would say things to myself like, well, I haven't drank for like 2 weeks, I can put it down, you know, but how long did that last for me, right? And then you started asking me questions like, when you put it down, like, are you thinking about it, right? This mental obsession. And that was a piece of Alcoholics Anonymous that really struck with me as somebody so young that even when I don't have alcohol in me, there's always another ism behind that, right? There's always another obsession behind that, right? So I know through my experience of being sober that I can still be absolutely insane without a drink, and the drink was just a temporary solution to life, and it never worked anyway, right? So I'll backtrack a little bit and tell you about how I actually found Alcoholics Anonymous. Was that, I found myself in this situation where, you know, I was with a guy and then I woke up and I wasn't sure what happened and I was absolutely terrified, and that it was just one of those like, man, how did I get here again? You know, I told myself I wasn't going to do that. I didn't know what a blackout was until you guys told me what it was. I thought it was just that I'd like to sleep when I wanted to sleep, where I wanted to sleep. That's the kind of person I was. I just like to take naps. So, and then you guys told me what it was, and I was like, oh. And then actually, interesting enough, like, as I work with other women now, I actually had to explain to another woman what a blackout was, and she had the same, oh. So that experience happened, and I was absolutely terrified, and I'm at the place where my family is just like, you can stay in this bedroom because we don't know what else to do with you, but don't talk to us, right? Like, my mom had her own issues, and she had left for a while abruptly, and she came back, and I resented her so much for it, you know? And she would try to make things right, and she'd made this whole trip to Disney World, and I was just so cruel to her, you know, just screaming in her face, disrespecting her. And she would try to be like, here's 20 bucks and go do something fun. And I'd throw the money in her face, you know, and that's the kind of person I was. And so that after that experience happened, I remember I had started going to college, and I don't even know how I got into college. And I just remember that, like, I would cut school so much, but I would pride myself on the fact that I could get through exams hungover, I could get through school drunk, and I'd be on other substances and get through it, you know? And so, like, it's not a problem, right? Because I got, like, on paper, it's like the grades are good, but the other piece of paper that says detention, you know, like, these justifications of that this is good, so I'll be okay. So I ended up in college, and we had this freshman orientation, and they had mentioned something about, like, counseling services, and it was the first time ever I really heard of, like, counseling services. And I just put it in my back pocket because I wasn't done yet. And that's when that experience of drinking and driving happened. And so, actually, that was before. Sorry. And before that, I was just, the experience with that guy happened. Sorry, that's what I meant to say. So so I knew that I wasn't done yet. And that still sits with me today, especially when I work with other women, that, like, if they're not done yet, they're not done yet. You know, the book talks about willingness being indispensable. And I wasn't done yet, and I took that card for the counseling center, literally put it in my back pocket and was like, maybe some other time, thank you, you know. And then that moment came where I was like, I don't know what to do anymore. I don't know what to do anymore, and I can't live. And I couldn't keep up in college. That I could get away with anything thing just wasn't working anymore. You know, all my relationships were, like, gone. Nobody wanted to talk to me. Everyone was just like, if they were talking to me, they were like, please get some help. And the people that said that to me, I was not very nice to. Because don't tell me what to do, right? That defiance in me is just unbelievable. Even today, my sponsor will be like, stop arguing. I'm like, I'm not arguing. I'm just trying to explain something. So I was on the light rail going. I go to school in a city in Newark, and my commute was like 2 hours. It was like crazy on the train. I got to walk a mile to the train station, and I walked shortcut through the woods to get going in the morning to, like, start my routine, because I had a routine. I had, like, a ritual, like, way of starting my day with other substances and alcohol, right? And I would actually, like, store my stuff in the woods, like my bottles, because my closet was too full of empty bottles, and, like, I was getting too lazy to clean it up, you know, because when you're at that place, you're not really keeping clean, you know? And so I would make my pit stop in the woods and start my day, and then I would get on the train, and then the last stop is the light rail. And when you get out of the light rail, the counseling center building is right across the street from the light rail, and there's an intersection in between. And I just prayed to a God that I did not believe in. I said, you know, if this sign says walk, I will go in there and talk to someone. If it doesn't, I'm going to take a right and go find my people. And I was just so broken, and, you know, that scorecard read zero, and it was just this loneliness and despair that, like, nobody understood, you know? And I didn't know there was a whole fellowship of people that understand. Didn't know that yet. So I got off the light rail, and it said walk, and I was just so broken that day I walked in there when it said walk. I kept that promise. I don't know why. So I went in there, and I can imagine the people that work there, like, what just happened here? But they handed me, like, an intake form, and they asked me to fill it out, and they asked me to, you know, how much do you drink, to, like, to what, you know, when, how much, don't ask me that. So I filled out this form, and then they immediately sent me to a drug and alcohol counselor, even though I lied. I thought, I don't know what I was doing. You know, that's probably the most honest I could be at that time to really put it out there. But they sent me to this drug and alcohol counselor, and she sat down with me, and she's just, like, the sweetest woman on the planet. And she was just like, you know, do you think that any of this might have anything to do with your drinking? And I was like, any of what? Like, you know, I'm so delusional, right? Our book talks about this delusion that us alcoholics walk in here with, that I just don't even know what's happening, right? Like, I don't even know how much trouble I'm really in, right? But you could see it sitting right over there. You know I'm new when I walk in the door. So she looked at me, and she asked me that, and then she asked me if I could maybe not drink for one day out of the week until I saw her again the next week. And I was like, one day? Are you kidding me? A whole, like, 24 hours? And she was like, yeah, you could do it. Like, and I was like, you know what? I'll prove it to you. Right? That's how I started. Because I'm defiant, right? So I did the day, and then I kept doing what I was doing, and then I met with her again. And she said, wow, you did a day. Like, how about a week? Right? And I was like, oh, I don't know about that, and a whole week, and something in me was just, something in me just kept the, you know, this regret of the past, right, that I just can't breathe, and this peace that maybe there is something here, this tiny shred of hope that this woman started to give me, right? And so I did that week, and I never been to rehab, but I probably should have went to detox. And I was just disgusting. I don't even know how else to say it. And so I met with her again, and I said I did the week, and she said, well, now you can start counting days, and there's this meeting that's, like, near campus, and it's an AA meeting, and I was like, what is that? I didn't know. And she was like, well, just check it out, and you know, I'll meet you there. And then I found out that she had 13 years sober at the time, and she just took this, she just made this decision that this is somebody that really needs someone to show up with her, right? So like I do that today. If I know that you're new, I'll be like I'll meet you there, right? Because it's so terrifying to walk through those doors, you know, just to walk through those doors. Forget about saying I need help, right? So I went to the meeting, and I went early because, like, I like to control things, and somehow by being early, I can scope out the room and figure it out and what's going on here. So I got there early, but what I found was this young woman making the coffee, right? And it was a small room. I couldn't avoid her. I'm like, oh, she's going to come over and talk to me. You know, and she came up to me with a cup of coffee, and she started saying hello, And I don't even know what she's saying. I mean, I was so shot out that, like I had no, we were talking before the meeting, like, I had no sense of being, like, no social skills. Like, I didn't know how to be with people. I didn't, like, if you talk to me, I'd think you, like, were going to come in my walls, you know? And I just didn't know how to be. And she was just being so kind to me, and she welcomed me into the room, and I hadn't been welcomed anywhere in so long. And she was so kind, and I couldn't hear what she was saying, but I still remember how she looked. She was wearing, like, black pants and a purple sweater, and her hair was all put together, and her eyes were clear, and she didn't have bruises on her face like I did. And she just, she looked like, I was like, am I in the right room, you know? And then, you know, the meeting proceeded to happen, and I was terrified that I started nodding my head and agreeing with what was being shared. I don't even know what it was, but I was scared that I could identify with you. And so I was the kind of person that, you know, if you, when everyone's like, hi, I'm an alcoholic, hi, and then it'd be like, hi, I'm Sarah. Please go, you know. And I couldn't say it, you know. Because I was not supposed to be an alcoholic. I was supposed to be the Sunday school girl, you know? And I disappointed everyone in my life, and nobody wants to talk to me. Like, I can't be an alcoholic on top of all that. These insane thoughts that thank God I had a sponsor help me see. But so I started identifying, and I started going to this meeting, and that's when I didn't get a sponsor because I wasn't going to get close to you. And a woman for on top of that, like, you were, like, my competition. Like, I was either going to beat you up or, like, stay out of my way. Like, that's how I was with women. And so I didn't get a sponsor, and that's when that incident happened with drinking and driving. And so I came back to the meeting the next week, and I just, something stuck my hand in the air, and it said, I'm really new, and I really need help. And this girl came up to me, and she said, I'll sponsor you. And, you know, she was young, and she introduced me to other young people in the fellowship. And I was like, what is this? How are you all sober, you know? And I got to know old-timers in my area, and they would say things to me like, you know, like, I'm living one day at a time, and everything's so beautiful, and God makes the waves come in and out, and I'm like, what the, you know, but I'm going, you know, like, I'm going to these meetings, and I start just, like, hopping in the car, you know, just, we have this joke in our sponsorship network that we're going to get my sponsor shirt that says, like, get in the car, like, shut up and get in the car, you know, it's kind of what we do to each other, but But I started getting in the car, you know, and I didn't know at the time that that's what you call a willingness, right? A desire, right? And so I started doing that, right? And then that same girl that welcomed me into the room, you know, she was pregnant and she was going to move away and they needed a coffee maker at the meeting. And guess who it was? And I was like, at first I was like, how do you even make coffee? You know, I didn't know how to do these things and you guys showed me. And there was this old timer at the meeting, George, he'd come and he'd always be like, this is the best coffee ever, Sarah. Like, you know, and I'd come, you know, then I started like, I need to get here an hour early, make sure George has his coffee because nobody can do it like Sarah does it. And I love that coffee commitment, you know, and I had it for like almost a year or something, like, because it was a really small meeting, but then what ended up happening was I started to hide behind that coffee pot, because I did not want to move forward, because I was scared. I eventually got a new sponsor, and the sponsor started taking me through those things, the steps, and I had no idea what they were. I didn't know what a big book was. I just knew that if I went to the diner, somebody will probably pay for my dinner. So that's how it was. And it was, you know, it was great because I started to build that fellowship, right? But I didn't, you know, I wasn't in a place, like I didn't understand that there was so much more to this than just not drinking. Our book says, and in the big book and in the 12 and 12, it talks about, you know, that we feel, but the elimination of drinking is but a beginning. It says it in so many places, right? And then you get to like different places in your recovery, and it's but a beginning all over again, you know. And so I was away from a drink, and you know, I was good, you know. I had friends, and but there was this piece missing, right? Where I was still kind of crazy, and my family. And I still weren't speaking, you know, it's kind of couch surfing. And a piece of me started to want that because I'd go to meetings and I'd see what you had, right? And so I saw this woman share one night and I went up to her and I was like, can you please take me through these steps? And she said, sure. And I'd go to her apartment in Harrison like every week, once a week I'd go and I just loved her apartment. Like I loved being somewhere that I was invited and it wasn't like, you know, like full of broken bottles kind of place, you know what I mean? And sometimes she'd make me dinner and we would sit and we would go through that book, you know, and she explained to me what an allergy to alcohol is and coming to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And I thought that that was something I had to figure out. And I've learned that that is like, there's nothing to figure out about that one. I mean, if I could figure it out, I would be like in the clouds, you know? But so she started explaining what we need in this program, and she started to show me that on my own power, like, where am I going here? You know, what's my life look like? And she took me through a fourth and fifth step, and my first fourth step inventory looked like 8 names on a list, because that's all I could crank out of me. You know, it's like mom, dad, brother, and a few other people. And she was good with that, you know. She was good to make that beginning, and we talked about those people, and I started to feel this freedom, you know, and I started to want that freedom, you know. I never, when back in the beginning when Clarissa asked me to stay sober for a day, I could not even imagine a day, you know, and I'm here like at a year doing my fourth and fifth step, you know. And how did that happen besides, you know, I would do things like make the coffee, pick people up for meetings and drop them off. I had a little hoopty 99 Toyota Corolla, best car I've ever had. And, you know, we would rock and roll and we would do it. And I couldn't believe I had a year, and we started getting into this work, and I started to see these defects of character, you know, judgment, defiance, arrogance, avoidance, right? I started to make amends to my family, and I started to get these relationships back in my life. You know, I got wheels now, and I'm in a relationship, and things are good. Things are so good, and everything's perfect, and I'm never going to have to go through all that pain again, and everything's great. And, yeah, my family starts talking to me again, and I actually finally make the decision to move out of there because it's probably not the safest place to live. But I told my family that I'd be home every weekend to have dinner with them, spend time with them one day out of the weekend. And I've done that for 5 years, unless I go on a retreat or something, and then I'll come on a weeknight. But I go once a week to see my family, and I can tell you that that is not something I wanted to do, and a lot of times still don't want to do. But the deal is that, you know, if my recovery was based in how I wanted it to look like, what I wanted to do, if my opinion mattered in any of this, I'd be drinking or dead. Right. So my sponsors started showing me things like show up anyway. Right. And I started to learn that from these coffee commitments. Right. I started to learn how to be accountable. Right. And I started to grow and my life got pretty good. You know, like I was happy with the 99 Corolla. It was all I ever wanted. And I was in college and I wasn't doing well in college, but I was in it still. And so that eventually caught up with me. But so what ended up happening was, at 2 years sober, I that relationship ended. Oh my God, and my life was over. But what I learned out of that experience was no human power could relieve us of our alcoholism. Ain't no human power, and that's a big thing, especially for what I feel like for women. I don't know the experience for a man, but I know that sex and checks are a big deal, right? And we don't want to talk about those things. We don't want to go there. Like, God, you got my drinking, but I'm going to hold on to absolutely everything else, and I'm going to run the show. And that's how it goes. It blows up in your face. And at 2 years sober, I was in the psych ER because I was off it, you know? And I'm so grateful for that experience, because I know that alcoholism has it's a threefold disease, right? It's physical, mental, and spiritual, right? And I was so broken. And I was obsessing over, if it wasn't him, it was food, it was money, it was this, it was that, and I couldn't get a handle on it. I just couldn't get a handle on it on my own, you know? And I got to lay in that that ER and made some good friends with fun colored hair, and you know, we hung out. And what I found in that hospital bed was that no one's going to come to save me but my higher power, right? And I had to experience that, right? And that was just, in that moment, something had to be done differently. And I'm so grateful for that appendix in the big book that talks about the spiritual experience. And all that really says is change, like a million times, right? And this spiritual change and the shift that happens is like a different layer of willingness that happened in my recovery. And so what ended up happening was, I was, after I got out of the hospital, I was hanging out on my friend's couch, because I like to couch surf, and he's one of my best friends in recovery, and he just would like throw me in the car, and he'd be like, we're going to a meeting. And he took me to this meeting, and I heard this woman from the podium talk about how she was going through a breakup, and how she was getting through it with God right by her side, you know? And she, you know, I didn't know her at all, but I went up to her and I was like, will you sponsor me? And that's just Alcoholics Anonymous, man. We're family everywhere. Like, literally, I walked in here, I'm like, I'm not going to know anyone. I'm just a girl from Jersey. And I have, like, mutual friends sitting right here, you know, and it's so amazing that everywhere I go, I got family. Because, like, I always had this, like, complaint with life that, like, I never had a family. My home is so broken, but you know, I found a bigger family than, like, I had to get so many Christmas gifts this year. Oh my God. And I'm so grateful for that, right? Because I never thought I'd have a life where there was a list of people I love, you know, and that love me and want me to be a part of their life, and that I could be like a person that doesn't throw $20 in your face or wants to throw hands at you, you know? So I meet this woman and I ask her to sponsor me, and she helps me through this resentment at my ex-boyfriend, and I start to have this like softness, this level of forgiveness for people, and I just couldn't believe that it had opened up so many things that I just hadn't dealt with in my life, because I'm like a runner and I shut the door and I don't want to deal with it. I just, like, if we talk about it, then what am I gonna say? You know, I don't know how to talk to you. So it really became about my relationship with my family, right? And that started to evolve. And then she had to move to California, and I ended up with Karen. And Karen just, like, I mean, people say she's too much, and she says to me, you know what, Sarah, I hope you're too much someday. And she just taught me how to be a human being again, or for the first time ever, right? You know, the doctor's opinion, it says something along the lines of, you know, if we were to recreate our lives, our ideals must be grounded in a higher power. I probably misquoted that. But the point is that my ideals must be grounded in a higher power. And I didn't know what that looked like until I had those experiences and you showed me what it was, what life on life's terms is, you know? And she would show me things like, Sarah, you close the shower curtain because then it gets moldy if you leave it open. Like, I'm like, really care? And, you know, show me how to do laundry and all these little things. But besides that, like, she threw me into service, you know? She took one look at me and she's like, you think way too much of yourself, right? And she started to explain to me that selfish and self-centeredness is the root of my troubles, right? And I was at that place in my recovery where I was willing to look at that for the first time ever. And she sat with me and she did a thorough fourth and fifth step with probably a full notebook of people. And I really started to feel connected to the truth. There was actually, she speaks a lot in Pennsylvania and she'll throw me in her car and we were doing my fifth step in the car on the way up here. And we had gotten to some things that, you know, I really got to see that selfish and self-centered entitlement, right? You know, I think I'm so entitled for my parents. They owe me so much, right? Because they weren't there when I was a kid or whatever it was, right? And she showed me how entitled I really am and how grateful I should actually be for my parents. And she told me to go home and get to know my parents. And we're in the car driving to Pennsylvania. And I'm like, Karen, I think we need to pull over. I'm feeling a little, you know. And I call fifth step now, I call it spiritual vomiting. But it was the most amazing, like, purge of my life. The only way you can feel that is if you experience it, you know what I mean? And I got to see this truth of the selfishness that ruled my world. And no wonder these relationships weren't working, right? Like, where was God in all of it? So I started to show up differently at home, and I started to go home because my issue was I'm like, Kara, go home and, like, what do I say to them? Like, I can't say, like, what's up? Or, like, I can't tell them about my life. They don't care. They don't care that I, you know, that I'm, like, the intergroup rep in my home group. They don't care. Like, it doesn't matter to them. And she started showing me how to show up differently, how to be of service to my family, you know, like, do the dishes, help her around the house when you're home or whatever. And ask her about her life was the biggest thing, right? So I started to get to know my mom and dad in a different way, and I started to ask them questions like, you know, what was it like when you went to school, or how was it when you grew up? They grew up in Pakistan, and they had an arranged marriage. They didn't know each other until, like, the day of their wedding, and they've been married for, like, 20-something years, and, you know, like, I don't know, there can be a little a drama there sometimes, but I'd always make it about me, right? Every time they thought it was about me, or it was how can Sarah fix it, or if they're not okay, I'm not okay, and if there's something wrong in the house, it's like, if I don't make it okay, then there's something wrong with me, right? And the selfishness and the self-pity that I didn't even know was this manipulative behavior that drove me to get in the middle of everyone's affairs, right? And, you know, I learned I'm not their marriage counselor. And so I'd show up differently, and I'd show up and ask them how they were doing. And then my dad would start talking about my mom, and I said the most amazing sentence. It was like, Dad, I really don't want to talk about mom right now. Like, tell me a story. And he would start telling me a story about his life. And, you know, he grew up in, like, poverty. He doesn't even know when he was born because they didn't, like, have a birth certificate. Like, he just guesses how old he is. Very touchy subject with him. But I'd start to, you know, when he came to America, he lived in Jersey City for a long time. So we'd take these drives over to Jersey City, and I used to get so nervous about what we're going to talk about. But we started having, you know, Karen said, bring God with you on the ride, you know? And I would pray, and I would be like, God, like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do, but make me useful and, like, help me have a relationship with my, show me how to be a daughter, right? I didn't know how to pray like that, right? And in the beginning, my prayers were like, okay, God, grant me the serenity, blah, blah, blah. Okay, I can, or I'm praying, right? And it was like leaving a voicemail to like a number you don't know kind of thing. And they started to evolve where like, I don't know when, right? The shift just happened. And I got to know my parents and, you know, I got to know that my mom, like, the only reason she got to go to school was because she went on full scholarship and because she's a woman and over there they don't pay for that, right? And she, my whole life, like, I didn't know, but she, like, fought for the freedom for me to go to school, right? And I was just so entitled, like, I just thought that that's what I was gonna do, right? But she paved that way for me, like, she went through a lot, like, if I did something, it would turn my, you know, it would turn into a thing with the family with like, you're not raising her right, you're not raising her right, and go back and forth, right? And I didn't know that I caused so much pain in my family. And she sat down and she told me about why she left us and why she came back and what had happened and that she was going through things in her life. And I got to know this woman as a human being, you know, and I didn't know that was possible. And God and Alcoholics Anonymous did that for me. And my brother is just the sweetest kid ever, man. And I have a wonderful relationship with him today. And I couldn't have done that on my own. You know, my own power, my ideas, the way my life looks like is in that closet with clinking bottles. You know, when I was a year sober, my mom cleaned out that closet and she called me crying and she said, I didn't know how bad it was, you know? Yeah, that was definitely a big moment, you know, and they don't really care much about AA, they don't care to know about it, they just know that they have their daughter back, right, and we have, like, we can go out to dinner and, like, nobody fights, like, I can't believe that that's possible, I don't know how, I didn't do it, man. And I just did these steps, man, and I started showing up for my family and I took those suggestions and, you know, I've always been involved in service after that experience and I've always made it part of my life, you know, like on all my affairs, right? And I couldn't believe how it changed every dynamic we were talking about I had a speaking commitment on my birthday, like I think it was like my 21st birthday in AA or something, and all my friends came. And they were all sitting in the front row, and it was like, you know, I didn't have to hide him from her or move her or, like, have to separate people or, you know, manipulate every relationship. They could all hang out together, and I could be me. You know, I got that freedom that I didn't even know I wanted, you know? I didn't even know I wanted it. And so, you know, just yesterday, it was like, it's January and it's 65 degrees and I'm like, let's go for a hike, family. And we get in the car and my parents are really proud because I got my first big girl job and my dad's making jokes. He's like, aren't you supposed to be at work? And I'm like, Dad, it's Sunday. Like, stop messing with me. But I can joke with him, you know? And it was so weird. My dad is like not a really religious or spiritual person that I know of. But we sat up on a rock in the mountains yesterday and we meditated together and he gave me a hug and a kiss. It was like, whoa, you know, how is this happening in my life? And it's only because of God and showing up the way Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me how to show up. I don't know how else to say it, but I know that I can show my gratitude by continuing to work with others, you know. And passing it forward because this experience is not one to be missed. You know, it's changed my life and it has turned me into a woman that I didn't even know that I could be, right? And I've had many experiences of, you know, I can say I believe in God and that, you know, yeah, third step prayer and I can have that intellectual faith. But I've also had experiences where like, okay, I don't know what's going to happen, but God's going to show up, right? And there was this one particular, you know, I was talking about school, and I'm not good at math, and I didn't want to deal with it, so I just kept taking the same math class and kept failing it, and it caught up with me, and I couldn't live where I was living anymore because I live on campus. And so they were like, you have 24 hours to leave, and I didn't know where I was going, but I didn't know what else to do but go to my Thursday night women's meeting and tell my sponsor. And I'm at that meeting, and I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, I don't know where I'm going to go. I don't really have, you know, I've just been in school. I haven't been really working. I don't have the savings. What am I going to do? And, you know, a woman that we know in the meeting, she kind of overhears the conversation, and she's like, you know, we're looking for a receptionist at our law firm. Like, you know, if you want the job, like, send me your resume and show up tomorrow, and, you know, it's probably yours. And some of my non-alcoholic friends they're really funny. They're like, Sarah, you can get a job in a heartbeat. but so when that happened, I drove up to that interview with like my 99 Corolla full of my bedroom, you know, everything was in there, and I parked like really far away so they wouldn't see the car, and I walked in and with my probably only possible business attire clothes, and I went in there and I interviewed. And she was like, all right, come on in, you know, and my sponsor said you can stay with me for a month. Month, no longer than a month. Get yourself together, find a place to go. Looking for a place to go, got a job. What am I going to do? I don't know how to do this. And one of my best friends, that same guy that pulled me off the couch, he was like, my roommate just bailed. Like, I'm looking for a roommate, you know. And God just has it all aligned. And I started to, I tapped into this power, this strength that I didn't even know I had, because I was willing to let God run the show, you know? And that's not every day, I promise you that. But I do my best to live in today, and I have a daily reprieve, and I do my best to talk to God in the morning when I wake up and thank Him when I go to bed, you know? So I think we have celebrants, and I think that's my time, so thank you so much for having me.